You're listening to the Miniature Podcast. My name is Ryan, and I'm the Useless Wizard. Today's guest is John Ninas. John has only been painting for a couple of years, but in those few years, he's already started to make a name for himself. He took first place in the 2019 Resin Beast competition at Adepticon, as well as joining his good friend Scott the Miniature Maniac to produce their own podcast called Trapped Under Plastic. I hope you enjoy the interview. I certainly did. Just wanted to give you a quick note for context. This episode was recorded on the same day that Adepticon 2020 was canceled. Welcome back to the Miniature Podcast. Today's guest is John Ninas. How's it going, man?
It is going as well as can be expected. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm a little bummed out. Adepticon just announced their cancellation as of hours before this recording. So I'm doing as well as I can.
Yeah, it's funny. We just mentioned a minute ago that you reached out and were like, you know, do you still want to do this tonight or should we postpone? And actually, like 30 minutes prior, I'm like, I don't know if I can do this, but I think this is therapeutic, right? I think we can go through the stages of grief together. We can understand that this sucks, but in the grand scheme of things, in the grand scheme of life, this is just a road bump and we'll get through it.
Yep.
All of us nerds together. So,
yep. And as we speak, there are streamers and nerds aplenty on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram trying to frantically coordinate some kind of almost pseudo-digital replacement. Things like 24/7 streams, stream chains, things like that. So there will be things happening during Adepticon week and weekend. It's just not necessarily in person. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we figure out.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Or, you know, I'm thinking I'm just going to drive there myself and have a candlelight vigil outside the hotel.
Right.
I think that that's the best way for us to commemorate the
year. I mean, I haven't canceled my plane flight yet because it's non-refundable. So it's still there. I could still just go to Chicago.
Yeah. Speaking of that, we still got our hotel tickets. I wonder. What could we get into? Just run around all the halls and set up like a different painting space every day in each different room and pretend I'm learning from somebody from Europe. And
there you go. We'll have to learn to throw our voices and just do really bad French and European accents. And make sure it bounces off the wall back to us.
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah. I can do a French. We can do a French accent.
Oh God!
There you go.
Boom. There you go.
Done. I don't know of any French miniature painters though. That's a slight problem.
Jeremy Bonamont.
Oh,
like
you're right.
The author of Figopedia, like one of the seminal miniature painters.
Yes.
In my opinion.
You're right. I was thinking a lot more literal in you know who I see and think of
with sure
Adepticon teachers, but
yeah,
a lot of Spaniards, a lot of Germans, mm-hmm. And a lot of Americans and some Canadians.
Yep, we just set up two chairs and two tiny like little school desks in the middle of one of the conference rooms, and then have Ben Comments like do a Discord call on a projector, and then we're set.
Yeah, that's really all we need. I think that the problem would be is if you're in those school desks when you have to open the lid, then all your paints and your models just fall off the desk.
That's true. No, just set down like a plate of tin with some blue tack and then magnetize the bases and your stuff. We can do this.
I magnetized the bases of my paintbrushes, guys.
Yes.
We're set.
We can do this.
Oh, man. All right. Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right, guys. You heard it here first.
All right. So for those of you who may not know who you are, what is it that you do in the miniature community at the moment?
What is it that I do? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's a deep question. All right. Let me think here. I'm on a podcast called Trapped Under Plastic. Yep. And we produce a show every other Monday, and that's with my friend Scott, also known as the Miniac. So I do that. I occasionally am on Scott's miniature Painting YouTube channel for a variety of videos. And I'm in the works of starting my own YouTube channel.
So excellent.
That will be coming soon. I also paint competitively. I paint for fun. I paint to game. So I'm a hobbyist all over.
Awesome. So how did you start painting miniatures? Like, how long ago did you start? What got you into it?
I've been painting minis for about almost 3 years now, probably a little over two and a half years. And so I'm a late bloomer. I've always been a nerd. I've always enjoyed gaming. Not so much miniature war games, but I come from a D&D background. Mm-hmm. And actually D&D probably started from playing Magic the Gathering. I started Magic the Gathering when I was in the fifth grade, and Magic was new and fresh and cool, at least to me and my one friend that played at school. But I've always been interested in fantasy. I always loved He-Man and Conan and Labyrinth and Dark Crystal, and just super interested in fantasy. And so logically I went to D&D, and we had miniatures when we played D&D. When we were young, we couldn't really afford much for miniatures. They seemed to be so expensive. But we'd play with pennies and dice, and when we could get a miniature, we would. Later on in life, as I was in college and after college, I ended up continuing to play D&D. And some of the miniatures that were being released at the time was a game called Confrontation by Rackham. And I bought a bunch of those miniatures, like really like deciding I'm going to learn to paint. Those are so stinking cool. I mean, at the time they put GW miniatures to shame. I'm not afraid to say that. Fight me. And they were just amazing. So I probably bought a dozen or more, and I bought this huge set of GW paints. The one that was like, that was like $150 or something. And I never painted a single one.
Really?
Nope, didn't paint a single model.
Okay.
I had all the intention to, and can't remember what it was. I got a girlfriend or something, probably like that. Playing too much World of Warcraft, probably as well. And I never got around to it. Threw them in a box, threw them in the basement. And then a couple of years ago, my buddy and I, that we played D&D together, he's like, hey, local hobby store is having this like little painting thing where you can spend a couple bucks and you get a miniature and you get to paint it for a competition for the store. And the miniatures look cool for D&D. So let's go do it. It's only a couple bucks and we get cool stuff for our D&D game. I'm like, sweet, sure, whatever. So we do it. And it's the Age of Sigmar starter box with the Khorne and the Stormcast.
I bought so many of those. Not even funny.
Such great models. I was just blown away at the quality. I'd been removed from miniatures and how they had evolved over the years that I didn't realize what the possibilities were. At that time, we were just buying all the pre-painted Dungeons and Dragons miniatures in the boxes. I don't want to even talk about how many of those we have in the thousands of those miniatures. And that's just all we had. So when I went and saw the quality of those GW sculpts, I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I took the miniature home and I started watching Painting Buddha videos nonstop.
Yep.
And just, watch hour after hour after hour and learn how to paint without ever really, you know, putting a brush to model. And I quickly learned that it's not so simple as Ben Comets makes it look. But it made me get confidence, right? Because, you know, if without that visual explanation of how this is actually accomplished, you're always second guessing yourself about, am I doing this right? Is there some way that's so much easier, so much more efficient that I just don't know about?
Sure.
But if you watch somebody do it and you're like, okay, there's no magic there. They're just really good at handling the brush and they know where they want the colors to go and the highlights and shadows. And they have a picture in their mind and they're just making that picture a reality. That just gave me confidence that I could do it too. And I just pushed myself that I could be as good as Ben. That's what I wanted to do right away. I wanted a first miniature. I wanted to be as good as Ben. And I certainly wasn't, not even in the same ballpark. But I felt like if I keep at it, maybe I can one day I could get there if I really push myself to it. So I guess that's my story of where I started. And I mostly just started painting as hard as I could to make every miniature look as good as possible from the beginning. And that it was good and bad at the same time. I probably didn't have as much fun in terms of just painting something and being relaxed. I very kind of high pressure on myself when I paint, and maybe that's not good long term, but I felt like I was able to close ground pretty quickly to get better than just being okay with a base coat, GW shade, and then edge highlight.
Yeah. Yeah. Pushing really hard right at the beginning, just trying to push the highest quality you can from the beginning. I can't imagine the kind of pressure that would take, or that would put on somebody, because I'm definitely more of a gradual buildup type of person. Mm-hmm. And then once I feel comfortable, then push hard. Pushing hard from the very beginning, that's what really drove you to that? Like, that to for someone with my mindset of, you know, figure it out as long as it takes and enjoy it while I go, what was the thought process that led to, like, I need to push as hard as I can regardless of whether or not I enjoy it? Like, that's what it sounds like to me. I could be very, you know, misunderstanding.
Yeah, I'm a competitive person, I guess. That's the main driver there, that if I'm going to do something, I just want to be as good as I possibly can at it. Mm-hmm. And I'll put in whatever I need to do to get as good as I possibly can. And if I turn out that after I feel like I've tried hard and I'm just not that good, I'll just stop. I'll just be like, nope, that's not good. I need to be really good at something or I'm not going to try. And so I felt like I was building momentum. And what I lacked in having fun or enjoyment during the grueling process of painting, I actually felt like it was all had the big payoff at the end when I finished it. I set it down and it was 100% done. And I'm like, wow. Like, I was just like so happy that it turned out better than I thought I could do. And that's really what has driven me. And now I've balanced it out as I've been painting longer. I'll paint stuff just like, I don't want to think. I want to paint for an hour and just kind of get this thing as close to done as I can.
Sure.
And that's okay. But I always feel like, yeah, but, you know, it's like, yeah, but this isn't as good as this isn't as good as I can do. I promise. Trust me. So people that see the pictures on Instagram or whatever, it's like, I can do better. I promise. So I always feel weird. It's just like, no, you should just be okay with that, John. There's probably some ego there I need to check.
Gotcha. All right. Where do you find your inspiration when you're painting miniatures or when you're thinking up a new project?
Good question. Where do I find my inspiration? I think often I want to try something that I haven't seen done in miniature painting before.
Okay.
And that doesn't mean it's never been done. It just means that I just haven't seen it. And that excites me to try something that, at the very least, I've never done. Right. So every time that I do a piece that I'm using for competition or I'm just trying my hardest on, I just want to try something new. I want to try something that I haven't seen or that I have never attempted. And a lot of times that's where some stress comes in, but I feel like if I do that in a time where I really am trying to create my best work, that I learn that new method or technique or idea better than I would have otherwise.
Okay.
Instead of doing kind of just testing it on 3 or 4 test models, I throw that all away. I don't have to do that. I'll just get it all under my belt after one try. For example, the piece that I'm working on right now for Golden Demon, RIP, the scene is painted during a rainstorm.
Ooh.
So how do you paint? And we've seen it on 2D art. And
sure.
To see how do you paint rain? How do you paint rain when you don't have the ability to show the raindrops coming down the scene?
Yeah.
So it's still a struggle. And there's one part of me that Golden Demon didn't happen at Adepticon this year, because I was really coming down to the wire trying to pull something off that I'm still not sure I'm going to be able to do. But trying something new excites me. So there's my answer. Final answer.
All right. No, I think that's a great answer. Just being able to try and realize something that you haven't seen before personally.
Yeah.
I mean, that's setting that kind of a challenge for a highly competitive person like yourself. That makes sense.
And sometimes you get inspiration from something else. Like the rain scenario was from watching Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah.
And so see this far future kind of environment in this pouring rain and these neon signs. Light and color is dispersed and it creates this atmosphere. Sometimes it's seeing somebody else's miniature that's painted amazingly, and this certain aspect of it really catches my attention, and I'm like, wow, that makes me think about this other thing. In a weird scenario too, like if I see a model painted really, really well, amazingly, a new model comes out, amazing painter shows their job of it on Instagram, a part of me goes like, oh, great. Now I can't paint that one because that one's painted so amazingly well. I don't know how I could do it better. And so there's the flip side of that coin, is sometimes I catch myself never even attempting to paint awesome models that I want to paint because I compare myself to that and I feel like I couldn't reach that. So there's cutting open a vein for you a little bit.
No, I think that's super relatable, because a lot of people... You know, it's kind of an ongoing meme online when somebody posts something, an amazing paint job, that someone in the thread or the comments is going to say, well, breaking all my brushes, throwing all my paints now, this, you know, that's just kind of a meme statement. It's almost like when somebody says first in a series of comments. Right. How do you get past that? Like when you look at something that is super interesting and you just feel like that, well, I mean, I might as well not try. There's no way I'm going to be able to do that. With you and your competitive nature, how do you break past that?
Gosh. Well, you're assuming that I have figured that out, and I don't
that's
know if I
that's
have.
Fair. That's fair.
I don't know if I have. I think the way that I would go about that is I try to do something completely different. And so even if the quality of their paint job I can't match, maybe I can approach it in a way that I think brings more interest to it, or makes it pop, or make it more relatable or more engaging as a piece of work than theirs. And so I can separate myself from the quality and instead on the unique artistic impression of what I'm trying to paint.
Gotcha.
That's where I'm at with. So there's that new Orgroid Myrmidon. So
yeah.
Big, that dude with the big spear and shield. And I just love that model.
Yep.
And a number of people have painted that or are painting that. Richard Gray, Treverian, a number of others. And I'm just like, great. I really want to paint that. Now I don't think I can. But now what I do is I just sit and I wait for theirs to be done. And so I can analyze it and dissect it. And then find a different way to do it. So mine won't be compared to those apples to apples, but mine will be something unique. And that's how I can get myself to go through the motion. Instead of every step of my painting process, I'm always comparing. Because if it's a similar style or similar color palette or whatever, I'm just going to compare
the
whole time. And I'm going to end up grinding myself into the ground and not finishing, or hating it, or burning out. And it's bad news bears.
Okay. No, that makes total sense. I like that. Just the idea of like, okay, yep, this person did it this way. Really good. I'm going to do it the best I can, but I'm going to tackle it from this other angle. So it's not compared. So I don't have to compare myself against that. I think that's a really interesting way to redirect kind of your creative energies in your self-criticism.
I appreciate that. Those were kind words.
You're welcome. I'm happy to give kind words.
Oh, man. This is good. This is therapeutic, man. This is good. I appreciate these questions and getting my mind on something productive and getting me excited to think about painting again.
Yeah, man.
I tell you, this afternoon, I was like, I'm fine with not painting in the foreseeable future. I'm that bummed. So hopefully after tonight, I'm ready to pick up a brush again.
I hope so. Because I, for one, I really want to see you pull off the rainy atmosphere effect. I've got a couple ideas of what I would do, but I want to see what you would do.
All right.
I'm excited to see that. Even if it's not the Golden Demon piece, even if you can't look at that and it's something like a small, you know, scenic base with a backdrop or something like that. Like, I want to see what you pull off. I think that'd be really interesting.
All right. Well, you hold me to it.
I will. I will text you every day if I have to. John, is it done?
Let me see.
It's just like pretty soon I'm just blocked on every social media.
Well, every good thing takes time. So
it's true.
We'll get there. Yeah, we'll get there. I will have this piece. I mean, I kitbashed and made my own version of a GW model. So the model was unique and no one else could have painted it before.
Nice.
And so I put a lot of effort into this already, into my vision. So it will be done. It just will be done probably with more love than would have been given if it would have been entered this year. So
sure.
So look on the bright side of life.
And I mean, if nobody's seen it yet, you could probably enter it into Nova. Just saying.
Right.
Just saying.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know how I feel about the minis making the rounds. Kind of. Do you have any idea on that? You have any
minis making the rounds? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I honestly haven't given that element a whole lot of thought. I can see how some people would have an issue with that. But I can also see, you know, it's, if you're especially trying to market yourself as an artist and, you know, you're trying to establish a reputation, but you've only had a chance to make one, I can see that. But on the other hand, having a separate entry for everyone that you enter, every competition you enter, is super impressive. And I think that would work a lot better for you.
Yeah, that's kind of the route I'm taking too, because I've seen it a couple of times, more than a handful of times, where folks will take a piece to Crystal Brush, and then they'll take it to Nova Open, and then they'll take it to Monte Sansovino, and do the tour right with their mini. And some of those pieces, typically, those are amazing pieces where it's a unique sculpt, or 90% of this is just handmade.
Sure.
And the paint job was 200 hours and all that. Like, you know what? If I did that, I would probably do the same. But if it's a dude on a base entering in Golden Demon, or, you know, Capital Palette, you know, I should let it live. And then move on to something else that excites me. That's my thought.
I think both of those perspectives make sense. And I think it's up to, until the community as a whole kind of comes to a consensus of what is considered good conduct, I think should follow your own convictions. And I think both of those perspectives have a really good point of view, especially if it's not something that's huge amounts of custom sculpting and conversion work and, you know, like a massive scenic base. If it's just something simple, I can see, you know, the submit it once, move on to something else because it's a smaller project. But a lot of Golden Demon projects are these massive undertakings. So I can see the desire to show those around.
Yeah, Crystal Brush had a lot of that too.
Yep.
There at the end, right? It was,
oh man,
who could build it bigger, faster, stronger, right?
Who could
create something that's in a totally unique sculpt no one's ever seen on this earth before. And its big reveal was the day that it entered the case.
Yep.
And it just became bigger and bigger, and just you painting a Primaris Marine was not going to cut it ever.
No, you either had to be a double threat, you had to be able to sculpt beautifully and paint beautifully, or you needed a tag team or somebody sculpted something beautifully and you painted it.
Yeah, like, and that's a whole nother faux pas topic there. should that be allowed? I don't even know. But maybe we don't get into that right now. I don't want to make enemies on your podcast.
So. No, it's fine. that's totally understandable. It's a good discussion. There are a lot of these types of discussions that I think would be helpful to have discussions about them. A lot of these topics, in the proper form, but I certainly don't feel qualified to comment too much on these.
Hey, it's never stopped me before. Being qualified has never stopped me from opening my big mouth. So.
That's true.
Let me be the one to just invite you into the fire.
All right. It's time to have a civil discussion and still make some enemies. Let's do this.
Yes. Right? All right. See, I'll make a devil out of you yet, boy. Oh, man.
Yeah. Definitely a topic that we could do some discussion about on like another episode, because I don't want to just do, you know, painter interviews. I want to do lots of painter interviews, sculptor interviews, community manager interviews, things like that. But also just having like round tables, I think would be really interesting, especially if we're able to address some of these things from different people's perspectives.
Yeah, I'll get in fights with people. Let's do it.
Let's do this.
I mean, make good friends.
Dude, well, I'm so disappointed. The cage match is off now.
Right? This is the biggest letdown, really.
Yeah. Now I'm even more sad now than I was before.
I'm just gonna start the rumor that that Sam Lenz had to pull some strings behind the scenes and get Adepticon canceled, so he didn't have to face me in the square circle.
Okay. Okay.
Just calling it like I see it.
You do that.
I'm wiry. You can't keep me down.
Right? Scrappy.
Yeah, I greased myself up first. Hold on to me. No, it's you know what? It's an amazing community of painters and Twitch streamers and fans and just everybody all over. This community is just so crazy. This is the reason why I'm doing this. I'm being perfectly honest with you. I have not experienced in all of my random pursuits in my life, I've not ever experienced a community that is so engaging, that is so invested, that is so welcoming, that is so helpful than our hobbyist community. And I mean, that just keeps me going. And just so many friends I've made. I've made more friends in 2.5 years of doing this than I probably have made in the 35 years of my life prior. Like, it's silly. It's so impressive, and it's all because we just have good people that come to this hobby. And,
absolutely.
When I'm talking smack about Sam, it's all out of love, you know? And so, you know, until it's not, right? Sam?
Sure. Just that once that switch flips, man, it's all over.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm seeing red.
Ooh.
Doesn't matter. Get out of my way.
Awesome. No, I agree with you with the community as in the community in general is a wonderfully positive place with a lot of really exciting and engaging people who are just ready to hang out and talk about painting or talk about wargaming and just have a good time. And I love this community because of that.
Yeah, it's a unique thing. And, you know, like everything, there's always going to be.
Oh, sure.
One, as long as you remind yourself that, you know what, it's 3 out of 2,500. I'm using that number as a specific example because we have about 2,500 people in our Trapped Under Plastic Facebook group, mm-hmm. and I've had to kick out 3. So 3 out of 2,500 ain't so bad.
I remember seeing you kick out one of those people. I remember that.
Yeah, and I really don't want to kick out anybody, but some people's kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah, some people just—I don't know—they don't want to play along. They don't want to play nice with everybody else, and it's kind of what we need. We need people to play nice.
And you know, everybody is entitled to their opinion. And I want to hear—I want to hear your opinion, even if it's unpopular. I want to hear what you've got to say because sometimes that will help us. Sometimes that will help us grow. And sometimes that will help us look in a different person's perspective. But you got to use your brain about it. And you can't be shutting down open communication while trying to make your point. And that's where people get into trouble, is they put their foot in their mouth, or that was their whole intention, was just to stir stuff up. And that's not helpful for anybody.
Absolutely.
I apologize. I got a little ADHD. I'm going to get
That is A-okay. These questions are general guidelines for a naturally flowing conversation. So
wow, I'm totally down. Like a very, very structured way to say that too.
You're very welcome. All right, have you ever had a eureka moment in the development of your painting style as it stands right now? I mean, everyone's painting style is changing and evolving, but where you are now, can you think of a couple eureka moments?
Good question. I would say a big one did come. I'd been painting for about 6 or 7 months. Mm-hmm. And I took my first miniature painting class. And it was, the teacher was a man named Sam Lenz. You may have heard of him.
Just a little bit.
And so that was my first time I had met Sam. And in that class, he introduced me to wet blending. I was aware of wet blending. From the very first minute I did, I was doing loaded brush, because that's what Ben Comets does. And I was doing blending on the miniature. But really the approach that Sam takes from the initial stages and what you would most folks refer to as the sketching phase, where I'm just getting my colors blocked in. I'm showing where I want the lights and the shadows and to create the mood and the overall atmosphere without worrying about details, without worrying about the final outcome, and just really setting the right baseline for the rest of your project. If you don't get it right there, it's so much harder to get it right later. So learning from Sam and how to take my base tone and include an off-white for the highlights and wet blend that in real time, and then include a really, really dark blue in the shadows and blend that in real time, and really get all my tones set up from the very beginning before I'm worried about how smooth it is, before I'm worried about all those tiny details and edge highlighting and all that glazing, everything. Don't worry about that. If you start off with a miniature that feels realistic to an environment, then the details at the end will work themselves out. So that was my biggest one. Honestly, I still paint that way to this day. I started integrating that actually with oils.
Okay.
So now I start with a number of my projects. I start with my full base coat and working in all my blocked colors in oils, because they have a longer working time. Mm-hmm. They are more forgiving and blending in tones, and adding in subtle colors while those tones are still workable. And that's fun. Downside of that is it takes freaking forever for them to dry.
So sure. Yeah.
You get that first pass done, and then you have to be okay with letting that miniature sit on your desk for 2 days before you can touch it again.
And do you
go ahead.
Do you start painting acrylic over that, or do you seal it like once it's dry so that it don't reactivate? Like, how do you, like, you said you do your base in oils. I haven't worked with oils a whole lot myself, so I'm curious, how do you move beyond that safely with the oils?
Yes, safely. Yeah, you have to use a mask and black gloves. It's just paint, man. It's just paint. Okay. So once it's dried, once it's cured, you can't. It's on there. It's not going anywhere. So you adding acrylic paint and water or flow improver, Lamian medium, whatever, you're fine. Now, if you took straight 99% isopropyl alcohol and scrubbed it with a toothbrush, yeah, I'm not promising anything. But I never seal them between oils and acrylics.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I meant safely as in, the integrity of the paint. But if you say that once they're dry and you can paint over them like normal, that makes sense.
Yep. Once the paint is cured, oil is actually a much more resilient topic or surface area thing, words, than acrylic paint.
All right. Is there a concept in painting that you feel is the most important to your style?
A concept in painting that's most important.
Yeah, like a technique or a sense of atmosphere or a color choice, just anything like that that really works its way into like every one of your paint jobs.
I would say if I were to look at all the pieces that I've done, that I would consider that like the places I really tried my hardest on. That's the way I categorize them, would be that time. That's it.
Okay.
And that may sound like a cliche answer or a stupid answer, but here's why. If I am willing to put in the time to get it to look like how I envision it in my head, then I feel like I've succeeded.
Okay.
And then if it still turns out crappy, then that's my own creative juices that have, not my technical execution. I don't worry about which technique I use in the moment to achieve what I'm going for. All I know is that I know where I want it to be, and I just let it flow naturally and not worry about what technique I'm using at the time. Once you can kind of spend some time and really figure out how to do each technique and you're not consciously worried about it, then you can start really focusing on what your goal is and working that instead of working on just trying to do this certain technique correctly. And so I'd say that I will take the time for it to have the detail I need it to have, the contrast I need it to have, the color vibrancy I need it to have. So time is my thing. And that also equates to me being a slow painter.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Is there anything particular that you want to eventually develop to be kind of a signature that other people are going to be able to see? Like if they look at a miniature, is there something that you want to develop, either a style or again, an atmosphere or a set of color choices that you want people to be able to look at your minis and say, oh, yep, that's a Ninas.
That's a good one. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those. I think if you were to ask Picasso what he wanted to be known for his first 5 years of painting, I don't know if he would be able to tell you that he was going for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's back when I worked in higher education, I worked with college students.
Mm-hmm.
I used to tell students there's two kinds of people in terms of goals and life goals and career goals. They're the kinds of people that they see the end. They know where it is. They know where they're going. Every path to the final destination is laid out because they have laid it out and they know exactly how they're going to get there. Those people are amazing. I'm not those people.
Yeah,
I'm the kind of person that I'm not worried about where I'm going 30 years from now. I'm worried about today. And if I can do my best today and then learn a little bit from yesterday and I'm focused on looking at the horizon and not on my, that I'll end up where I'm supposed to be. And so I'm not as worried where making that become something and pushing myself to have a style that I'm known. I feel like if I'm doing it right, in 5 years from now, that will be a thing. And if I force it, it will feel artificial.
Okay. So you're more of the approach of like that style, that signature style will develop and evolve on its own without you consciously thinking about it. It's just what you end up settling on doing.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a difference between winging it and let's see what happens. So let's see what happens.
Gotcha. Oh, that's great. Could you bring your microphone just a little bit forward? Because you're cutting out a little bit. I think your noise gate's cutting off the end of a couple of your words. It's not bad, but.
Alrighty, is that good?
That's much
better.
Yeah, that's a little bit louder. I think we're not going to get any cut off words.
Okay.
Perfect. All right.
Try not to lean back either. All right, back on track. We only got 17 left to go.
What's the first thing you do when you're planning a new project?
Ooh. The first thing I do when I'm planning a new project is I sketch it out.
Okay.
So I have a sketchbook and I have an idea of what it looks like in my head. Mm-hmm. And so I'll put the figure in its environment and work on a pose if I need to restructure a figure or figure out the layout where the story that I'm trying to tell with this very minimal footprint, how I can tell that story. And if I'm excited about the unique aspect of that story, as minimal or as major as the story is, that will fuel me to get me through the crappy parts of painting. So I start out with the sketch.
Hey, how many iterations of that sketch do you do? Like, do you just kind of like sketch until it's done with making alterations, or do you try one sketch and say, okay, this is okay, let's try a couple other sets of poses on separate sketches?
Like, yeah, usually I'll take a sheet of like 8.5 by 11 paper and it'll probably be 8-10 sketches on there, each about 1.25 by 1.25.
Okay.
It's really kind of wireframe of the figures, mm-hmm. basic volumes of the figures and the environment that they're in. And I'll do it from different angles. So I'll show a top down and then I'll do an isometric angle. I'll do a straight on angle. I'll do a couple from slightly different angles that are straight on from the back and from the front. And gotcha. So that way I can really picture how it all, I want it to look together. And then that will help me decide how I want to pose the figure if I pose it, or how I want it in relation to the base that I'm building, or how I have a secondary point of focus on the piece and how does my eye move to that portion.
Gotcha. So that helps you decide and settle on a physical composition for the piece. How do you approach the color composition?
Oh, color composition. Well, usually I'll draw inspiration from pictures online, so whether mm-hmm. it's paintings, whether it's art, whether it's movie posters, whatever, that kind of stuff. So I really find that if I sit down with a bare plastic model and I just stare at it, and then I stare at my wall of paints, and then I pull a paint and be like, oh, here's a blue-green color. Okay, this looks good for the shirt. All right, what color would look good with the blue-green of the shirt? And I look at all my paints. I'm like, oh, there's an orange. That kind of looks good. That would look good with the blue-green. Okay. First of all, when you do that, you are wasting so much damn time. And second of all, you second guess every step of the way.
Sure.
And then when you get to the orange, you're like, oh, do I still really want the orange? Or should I go back and let me look at my other oranges? Ooh, but what if I add a little yellow to this orange and mix it, and you look at it and you mix mm-hmm. it and you look? I cannot tell you how much time you're wasting. Find something, a color scheme. Could be a totally different subject. Could be a totally different medium. Could be a totally different kind of figure. Find something that excites you the way the colors work together. And then make those colors work on your miniature. You will save so much time. There'll be little details in there, tweak or whatever. But the major stuff, just pick something and run with it. I often will. I'll start with, like, even with this dragon. This dragon, which is huge, will have. It's got like, I don't know, like 5 colors
mm-hmm.
in this entire miniature, and it's giant, and so. You just stick with the limited color palette and mix the colors that you have to make it feel more organic, especially for organic pieces. It feels more natural that there's a tiny bit of that blue in this really flesh color inside of the wings. So just don't get overload with 40 paints. And every time you paint a miniature, that's not going to make it look better. That's not going to make you a better painter. Go with something that looks good, 3 to 5 colors, and then just have fun.
Okay. I like that. Sorry, just a second. Yeah, I like the approach of finding an inspiring color palette elsewhere and applying it to your miniature. And you could do that with Pinterest, you can do that with Instagram, you can do that with magazines, you can do that with retro toy art, comic books, sports teams. There's so many different places you could find that type of inspiration. I think.
Right. Don't force yourself to go places you're not already going.
Yeah.
To find that inspiration. Wherever you're already spending your time, whether it's time online or time in the real world or time with TV watching or whatever, take what you're already doing and look at it through that artistic lens once in a while. And you'll find that you don't need some amazing Rembrandt, you know, painting for you to find inspiration for color composition.
Awesome. What's something you want to try with a miniature, but you're hesitant to?
Something other than painting rain?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. something that I'm hesitant to. Well, I just did one for this dragon piece that I finished. I did chipping for the first time, where I laid down paint with an airbrush, which was freaking me out because I had to mask off the whole dragon because it was armor on the dragon's back. And I airbrushed it on. Then I put on the chipping medium, which got clogged in my airbrush and made me freak out.
Oh, no.
And it was spitting out like it was shooting loogies.
Gross.
Yeah. And then I put the other paint on top, and the chipping effect kind of worked. So I did that. Resin pours that are big, they scare the heck out of me. I just think I need like good two-part epoxy, but that worries me. Anything that is something new that is kind of like a trick or a fancy kind of after effect that you apply after you're done painting the model, that scares the crap out of me.
Yeah.
And that's why resin often, man, I just spent 100 hours on this. I could screw it up in the next 5 minutes.
Absolutely. I got to be really careful with those resin pours, which is why I haven't tried it yet, because it also terrifies me.
Yeah, do it on a piece that you spent 200 hours for Resin Beast last year on. Do your first resin pour there. It'll give yourself a heart attack.
Yep.
And then as you're trying to buff it all off with your Dremel, you're worried you're going to ruin the whole damn thing. And yeah, it's do it on something you don't care about as much the first time. And
yeah,
you'll be much better off than me.
Yeah, like Plastic Army Man. Paint up a Plastic Army Man and do a resin pour.
Green Plastic Army Man.
Yeah.
That's drowning in the jungles of Vietnam.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
Yep. All right. I'm with you. Let's do it.
What's the biggest challenge you've faced as a miniature painter?
Biggest challenge I've faced. I think my biggest challenge was to feel that in my own head that I was good enough to compete. And I don't think that this is an uncommon thing. I think a lot of us, and I was lucky enough to have somebody to push me, was a lot of us are just like, oh, you know, one day I hope I'm good enough to compete in Crystal Brush, or one day I hope I'm good enough to enter a piece in Golden Demon, or one day I hope to, you know, have a piece that I can enter in the local store competition. If you wait for one day will never come.
Yep.
Only when you put yourself in the position to attempt will you ever have the opportunity to succeed. And so my friend Scott said, great, you're going to come to Adepticon this year. Great, let's do it. That means you got to enter a piece in Crystal Brush. And so that pushed me to feel like it doesn't matter if I feel like I'm good enough or not to enter. I have to do it. I'm going to do it. And that was it. Yeah.
Was entering that first piece, did that kind of help psychologically with the confidence to submit other pieces afterwards? Did it kind of like break the dam?
It was good and bad. So it was good because I placed. So I'm like, I deserve to be here. And it was kind of like, okay, if I try my hardest and I put a lot of time in, I have a chance to, you know, to be recognized. That was the good side. And it fueled me to continue. The downside was, is I felt like I couldn't sustain it, or I felt like a fraud. I felt like a fraud. Like, I got lucky, or they made a mistake, or somebody just really, really awesome didn't enter this year and kick my butt or something like that, right? And so it always still kept that shadow of doubt of proving myself. And I think that that's not a bad thing if you don't let it become toxic to you. is that use that to fuel you to prove to yourself you are good enough, even when you doubt yourself.
Yeah.
I still do. I still, every time I enter, I'm like, oh gosh, ugh.
How do you think you would have reacted if you had not placed that first time?
I think I would have been okay, because just all of the excitement around having something in the case and people, you know, talking about it and people asking me questions and people giving me feedback and people giving me ways that I could have made it better,
mm-hmm.
and people acknowledging it being on like CMON website, like all of that was the win to me. The fact that I actually placed was just kind of like, this was just a bonus cherry on top. What I really took away was not what I thought I would. And that was that I felt the bug of the buzz that is convention mm-hmm. painting life, you know, that painting group, us painters, all of us, whether we compete or don't, when we're there at a convention and we're all of the same hive mind, it's a great feeling. And I felt like I'm a part of that group, because I entered a piece. I'm not just saying I'm a painter. Look, guys, I also paint, but like, I did. I entered something. So I felt like it was my first year at Adepticon, and I earned my keep to say I'm a mini painter. And so I felt good.
That's fantastic. I think that's really good perspective. I like that.
I like that you like that.
Good. Good. You've got me excited to try and enter something, because I too need to break through that.
Yeah.
What's your biggest disappointment or failure on a project, and how did you recover?
Disappointment or failure?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, I know you probably are looking for a specific thing here, but I'll answer this two ways. The first way is I will give you a specific example. And then I'm going to give you a more general answer that I feel is actually a bigger failure for me.
Perfect.
The specific example is my crystal brush piece. If folks had listened to a recent podcast of ours, I discussed this piece where I posed his arms. I had kitbashed this model. It was made from about four different Death Guard models. And I posed his arms in this very dynamic way where he's holding up this flail with his outstretched arms and a very strength worthy pose.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when I did that, I did it so the flail and his arm covered his face, which is not a smart thing to do for your miniature to have his face covered. So that was a pretty big oopsie.
This is why you dry fit, kids.
Here's my explanation for that. The arms I had painted, the arms attached to the flail, so it's a two-handed flail.
Yep.
He's holding it out, and the arms were separate from the whole torso when I painted it. So the arms were attached to the flail, and they were positioned in such a way where I had to like really tightly slide them in, and they almost like snapped in place once I got them just perfectly attached to the torso.
Mm-hmm.
I was dead scared that I would snap them into place dry fit, and I wouldn't be able to pull them off.
Gotcha.
Then probably your logical answer to that is, then why didn't you just dry fit them? And then if it was so tight, just leave it. That probably is what I should have done. So I super glued it. And what I didn't do was to take a step back and really just like observe from all the right angles while the glue was still wet, and then move his arms down a little bit. So that was a big mistake. I think overall, a big mistake that I make is that I spend too much time in the last probably 20% of miniatures than I should. And what that does is that means that if I spend 10 hours of painting, I could paint one mini to 100%, or I could paint two minis to 80%, because that's how much time that last 20% takes me.
Okay.
And I probably spend too much time really pushing that last 20% when a lot of things I should just be okay with it and then paint more minis. If I paint more minis, I'll get better as well. So there's kind of a constant downfall that I struggle with.
Now that last 20%, when you spend that much time, is that because you're pushing yourself, or is that just because you're just trying to get every niggling little detail perfect without, you know, necessarily pushing yourself in technique.
Yeah, I think it's more often than not, it's not technique at that point.
Okay.
It's just time consumption, especially with a lot of work with glazes and really in adding in more depth of hues with glazes, mm-hmm. and really getting a blend as 100% smooth as possible. Most of that last 10% for most of us, if we're really pushing our work, is oftentimes getting smoothness in our colors.
Sure.
And that means a lot of levels of glazing, a lot of going over, refining, and now I add a little bit more white. Now I glaze 6 more times. Now I add a little bit of light yellow. Now I glaze 6 more times. Like, that's just time. And so that's a big thing that I do that takes a lot of extra time. And I don't always need to be doing it. I mean, I know how that works for the most part. I'm not going to get better if I keep doing that.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's what I was curious about. Because if you're spending all that time on the last 20% or maybe 10% of the last 20% and you're pushing your technique, I could see an argument where that is more important than painting more minis at a standard you're already comfortable at. Because, yeah, sure, you're painting, you're getting more out and you're producing more, but you're not. Are you improving to a significant amount? But if it's just time and you're not actually pushing yourself during those last 20%, I can see definitely an argument for, like, cut that down, paint more minis, as opposed to the...
It's hard to make money. See, then this ties back into our issue being uncomfortable of sharing pictures on social media that I'm not super proud of. And so I'm like, well, I got to keep spending those extra 5 hours on this thing so I can post it and not feel like a noob. And so there's probably all these issues are just interconnected. It's a web of lies.
Yeah, it's all cause and effect, and it's figuring out, I think, how much extra time is going to get you to the point where you're at least minimally comfortable with posting, as opposed to, like, fully comfortable.
I think that's
a totally understandable struggle.
I gotta let the ego go and just post whatever and not worry about it. That's probably what I should do.
It does get easier. It does get easier, but then you see it on your wall, on your immaculately, like, curated Instagram wall, and you're just like, ugh.
Yeah,
I feel bad about this one. It's a struggle. What's something that you worked on that you think you did an amazing job, but nobody really noticed?
Something I did an amazing job that...
Or is there something?
Gosh, that's a good question. All right. I think that, in my Resin Beast piece from last year, I created this kind of pinkish purplish, portal that the demon was coming out of. And then I resin poured over top of it. But there's this kind of this pattern of colors and waves that are on top of the actual paint job that I freehanded the whole thing. And it took me a long time because I laid down all these pinks and purples and blues. And then I freehanded this pattern that kind of wanted to look like the surface of a water from like a comic book style of art. And also kind of look like something was just beneath the surface. And then I glazed over the top of that so you could see the pattern, and nobody ever said anything about it. And so I was like, I was really proud of hand done with white ink paint and then glazed over to make it feel like it was just under the surface. And no one ever said, good job, John. So
good job, John.
Single tear. Thank you.
What?
I appreciate it.
I don't know if there was a lesson in that but what did you change in your composition, or did you change anything in your composition in response to that experience?
I did. I actually made a conscious decision based on that for this year's recipes piece, in that I didn't put something that was so time intensive in a place where people weren't going to see it.
Okay.
Because that was around the back of the model, the whole front of kind of your money shot, right? You want to always consider your best angle of viewing for a model.
Yeah.
And that's the money shot. And from the money shot of that picture, the earth is erupting where he's coming out of the depths of the ground and it's exploding and everything. I mean, earth is curling back. And because the earth is curling back, you couldn't see the portal at all.
Gotcha.
And so I spent all this time and had this really interesting aspect. Now, it is this fun little Where's Waldo moment where if I turn the model around, oh, I see this wonderful, vibrant colors that's nowhere else on the model. That's cool, but that's also not a good use of time. I could have still done something like that without as much time and intensity and probably still had the same quality of piece. So,
gotcha. Oh, I think that makes sense. That's a really good way of processing failure and then responding to it in a reasonable manner. I think that's important because there are a lot of people. What are your thoughts when it comes to those types of like little hidden Easter eggs? Because a lot of people that I've talked to, or I've heard talk about it, say that when you're prepping something for a high level competition like Golden Demon or Crystal Brush, that it's important that there are these little Easter eggs found within the piece that you're only going to see if you get closer and closer and closer and things start to pop out for you. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's, I love it. I think some people do it really well, and it's good when it's subtle, or it's good where, you know, maybe it was the third or fourth time you came back to it, you noticed something. I think it's great. I think that it's not often necessary unless you're having a larger piece, a diorama, a piece that it has a bigger footprint where it gives you more square footage to actually have things to hide that aren't taking away from your main narrative.
Gotcha. Awesome. What's the biggest risk you've taken with a miniature project that's paid off?
Miniature risk that's paid off. Well, last year when we were going to Adepticon, I put my competition piece in a cardboard box with no padding or anything. And I forgot to tell Josh and Scott, who we were driving with, that was my competition piece.
Oh.
And they kind of just tossed it around the back of Scott's van.
Oh.
And it didn't break. This is not the answer you were looking for, but this is the risk that I took that still paid off because my piece didn't break and I still got to the convention. So that's my answer.
Okay, that's fair. Now, I have to ask you, why? Why did you do that?
The base of the thing was so big. It was probably like, it felt like it was like 6-7 inches around. And the Amazon box that was in was only like 2 inches wider. There wasn't really room for padding. If I put in bubble wrap, it was going to like scratch on the little trees and stuff that were made out of roots and probably snap them. So I'm like, I'll just put it in there, keep it in there safe, keep it tucked between a couple of, you know, coolers in the back. And they kind of just moved it around a bunch of times. Whoops. So it survived. We're good.
That's good. You know, from the sounds of it, it didn't sound like it should have. I've got like my heart rate is definitely up thinking about that. Like the anxiety, it's like between two coolers that are presumably full of heavy things. Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah, that's where if you're driving to a con, you keep if you have a piece you spent a ton of time on, you keep it in your lap. That's
absolutely. Yeah, that's all right. At least it survived. Did it survive the trip back okay as well?
It did. Yes.
Excellent.
And on the way back, it didn't go ride home in my lap, but the trophy rode home in my lap.
Excellent. That's the most important, right?
It was a giant, giant, like 8-pound piece of resin sculpted amazing mythological monsters that are holding up the trophy. It was cooler than my Mini. And so I held onto that.
Yeah, I remember seeing pictures of that. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Right. What's the biggest triumph in your painting journey so far?
My biggest triumph.
Yeah, just 100% win. And it doesn't necessarily have to be something you've painted. It could be something you've done within the community or something, a personal accomplishment. Just kind of in your overall journey.
I think it would honestly be the backing into meeting Scott and becoming friends with him.
Okay.
If I'm honest, because me entering the competition scene of miniature painting, me getting involved in the content creation side of miniature painting, me meeting all these amazing people and learning how all this stuff works and being able to get in front of a bunch of people, that's because of my friendship with him. And I think I don't even know if I would be here tonight if not for all the doors that he has opened for me. So that has been the biggest success.
That's fantastic. Yeah. For you personally, why do you keep painting miniatures? What is it about miniature painting that keeps you coming back?
To me, it scratches more itches than anything else I've done in life. And my itches are being a fantasy nerd, being a role-playing nerd, and having an active imagination about what if in a world that we don't live in, with living without the worries that we have on a day-to-day life, but there's new perilous ones that are all the more tangible and exciting and horrific. And using that that artistic itch, where I've always loved to draw and paint and create music and write, and it does that. It allows me to take something that was one thing and make it something else and allow other people to see it. And it allows me to talk about it, because in case you haven't noticed, I love talking as much as I love painting. So it allows me to do all. And I just need one hobby to do them. I don't need to do 7 different things to fulfill all that. And I've got a family and I've got a house and I've got a career. And I've, you know, there's a lot of things going on, and I don't have time for a lot of hobbies, but I got a time for one really awesome one. So.
That's a great answer. That's awesome. And I find myself in agreement. Like, that's what, one of the things that keeps bringing me back is it just scratches all the itches that I have. You know, I don't necessarily want to play tactical games. I don't necessarily even want to always play games, but I identify with, you know, getting the fantasy nerd or the sci-fi nerd scratch, the artistic nerd scratch, and the positive community and the close-knit group that we have. I identify with that a lot.
Yeah, I think you touched on some games. I love to play games. I don't have a lot of time to play the games.
Yeah.
It's something about creating models and painting models for a game that I theoretically want to play or could play. Something about that almost like makes it like I am playing too.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. And so I feel better about not always getting the time to paint and or to play the games, because I'm playing them in my head as I'm painting it.
Awesome. Last interview question. If time and money were no object, what's your unicorn project?
My unicorn project. My unicorn project would be a convention. And I'm not just saying this. This is something I've discussed and thought about before. It would be a convention in the United States that was miniature painting first. And we would have wonderful displays where people could bring all sorts of their work and they could be shown off. We would have vendors from all over the world, products that we need. There would be competitions for painting. There'd be ability to play games, but it would be about the painting side primarily, and everything to make that a success. So my unicorn project wouldn't be painting something. It would be creating something else, something bigger that that instead of us being the two tables with some lamps in the big Warhammer 40K convention, we are the convention.
Gotcha. So like a Monte Sansovino of the Americas.
Correct. Absolutely.
Awesome. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. I think it's possible. I think that as long as you appeal to the hobbyist side of all of those folks that maybe aren't 100% hardcore painters, but they're in different parts of their journey, if it feels approachable, it feels like something that they would enjoy, that they would enjoy all the variety of classes and learn so much and be able to pick up all sorts of new awesome gear and equipment and see all these amazing painters, the work they've done and compete and all this kind of stuff. I think it's possible. I don't think it would be massive right away, but I think in 10 years,
yeah.
Woo, baby. All right, let's do it. Are you in?
I'm totally in. Let's do this.
All right. It only cost you $7 million up front.
But I am not in a position to do that. But
that was a quick from yes, I'm totally in to I'm not in a position.
Well, there was a big ask there, man. $7 million, like.
Well, I mean, we're not going to go small timers here, you know. We're going to have ESPN 8 The Ocho cover this thing. So.
Oh, man. So
we're bringing it back to dodgeball here. That's what we're doing. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So where can we find you online, sir?
Where can you find me on the interwebs?
Yeah.
You can find me.
So you just cut out.
Oh, you'll find me on Instagram. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
You'll find me on Instagram. It is at Ninas John, NinasJon. My name is spelled J-O-N. There is no H in there. And you can find me every other Monday on the Trapped Under Plastic podcast, which is available on YouTube as well as all places podcast.
Excellent. Well, John, I want to say thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight and going through these questions on this, day full of sadness and disappointment. This has been an absolute highlight for me.
Right. Yeah, this has been a really much time, and I appreciate you having me on. This has been a lot of fun, taking our mind off of that negativity and seeing all the bright. At the end of the tunnel here that's coming around the bend.
I hope you enjoyed the interview. Be sure to check the episode description for links to John's socials and links to his podcast Trapped Under Plastic. These interviews are recorded live on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/uselesswizard. If you'd like to show up for a live recording, we'd love to have you. Showing up to the live recordings means you get to participate in the question and answer sessions that we have with our guests. So go ahead and give us a follow on Twitch, that way you'll be notified the next time we go live. If you'd like to support the Miniature Podcast, the best way you can do that is share this episode with a friend. Or you can give us a review on Apple Podcasts, or whatever podcast platform you prefer. If you'd like to keep up with what I'm doing in the hobby, go ahead and give me a follow on Twitter and Instagram under Useless Wizard. And until next time, remember that painting is good for the soul.